Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the IT Babble podcast, episode 202, being recorded on January 16th, 2022. The Steelers are playing the Chiefs right now as we are podcasting. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm trying to install Windows 10 on an SD card. I don't even know if that'll work. I just decided to try to do it.
See what happens. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. How big is that SD card? Because, I mean,
It's 128 GB high-speed SD card. I was like, I wonder if this could run Windows 10, because if it could, it could make my life a lot easier when I'm using my Linux machine.
I mean, I guess if you can put it on a USB stick, or an external hard drive, why couldn't you put it on an SD card?
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
All right. I mean,
there's probably a lot of reasons I should have looked into. So we'll see what happens.
Well, that's okay. That's all right.
I'm doing it live during IT Babble too.
Sweet. Well, hey, give us updates. We'll see how it goes.
I'll tell everyone how it's going. People are out there like, it can't be done. Well, we'll see.
We'll find out. Let's see. We have got a fantastic show. We're going to be talking about. We were going to talk about this last week, but we ran out of time. Legacy technology. You were going to talk about. We're going to talk about Chatterbox, and we'll get into that. And then the Surface Laptop SE. There's some news. Microsoft unveiled a video on how to repair it, or pretty much they just. Stripped it down.
I read your blog post.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions. I'm a lot of people patted them on. Anyway, we'll get on to it. And then there is this. It's our last topic here. I'll wait for you to do it because okay. That's your topic there.
But introduce it.
But first,
yeah, we might go long anyway.
So okay. We'll all right. That sounds good. Okay. But as always, what we do every week is.
What am I drinking?
What am I drinking? Tony, what are you? Anything special in the glass tonight?
I have a Sam Adams Cold Snap White Ale.
Oh, okay.
And it's quite good.
White ales are, you know, either they can be really good for me. They can be really good, or they can just be very. Just like kind of unremarkable, but Samuel Adams does make a. Let's see here.
Actually, pretty refreshing, and it's got a nice little, kind of like spicy. Kick to it.
Oh, very cool. Here, the Cold Snap.
Yep.
Nice. All right, putting a link here in the show notes in case anybody wants to enjoy it. I am drinking a Great Lakes Conway's Irish Ale. It's just a red beer. It's nothing super special or memorable or anything. It's just a solid red beer, and it's nice change kind of thing. Easy drinking. So that's it. Nothing crazy exciting or strange or anything. I think we got some solid choices this week. I'm going to try out that Cold Snap. I'll try that out next week.
Pretty good. Yeah.
All right. That's good. All right, so Tony, legacy technology costing people, schools, a fortune. Tell us the story.
Okay, here's the story. I'm looking over contracts and stuff for next year, like renewals or whatever. And we had a couple of bills that were coming in. I'm not going to say where they were from. We had a couple of bills coming in, and I was just curious, so I started research. I'm like, and they're pretty expensive. And I'm like, hey, you know, what are these phone lines for? And someone's like, well, you know, maybe they're for alarms, or maybe they're for the elevator, or maybe, yeah. You know, whatever. And I was like, but what are they for? I want to know what these are for. So I was really, really persistent, and I started digging into it. And I found that one phone line was actually for an elevator. The other one was not used anymore. And I can tell you that I saved a significant amount of money. And the next, and then like, and I, to cancel it, like, I'm like, we're going to cancel it if we're not using it anymore. So then I contact the company. I was like, hey, we're canceling this line, but can I ask you a question? Why is this elevator alarm like this expensive? It was the single most expensive phone line we had. And they're like, oh, we can reduce that by 10x.
What?
Yes.
What? 10 times?
Because it was on a contract from a long, long time ago.
Oh.
And it just slipped through the cracks. And this is something. So this actually happened when I was in China, and I've maintained the same kind of discipline whenever I work with another organization. Same thing. I want to look at all of these bills. So like, imagine building a school, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, and you weren't even really on fiber internet or whatever. And then you transition over, but you forget, and you have these lines you kept in place for emergencies. But then as technology evolved, you just didn't move it. And you've got two campuses in this case that were really far apart in the city. So you're paying a premium to keep these lines going, and there's no data on it. No one's actually doing anything with it.
Yeah.
And so I started doing the same thing like at my current job, and it just occurred to me, like, this is really, really important. Like, a lot of schools might be, or even companies, they might be leasing their phones. So they may not own their phones. So they're paying a monthly fee for every phone they have, mm-hmm. maybe cell phones or desktop phones or whatever. You need to count those phones at least twice a year and make sure that the phones you're paying for are the phones that are being used. Like, you'd be surprised how many people have a phone on their desk and never touch it. They just don't. They're just using their cell phone. Or you put a phone on their desk because that job in the past needed a phone, but now the job doesn't need a phone.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that stuff adds up. And so this all kind of came up recently because a school contacted me, and they're like, hey, our head of school said that he spoke to you before and you had a lot of good ideas for saving money. Do you have any ideas for us? I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's have a chat. Let's talk about your budget. So I had a 2-hour meeting with these people, and we went over their budget, and I'm like, when's the last time you reviewed your legacy tech? And they're like, well, what do you mean legacy? I'm like, okay, do you have any phone lines coming in and out of your campus that aren't, fiber, they're not digital, like whatever, they're old standard copper phone lines? And they're like, well, we don't know. I was like, what do you mean you don't know? It's the same thing that always happens. I'm like, you need to get a list of every single telecommunications contract you have and ask yourself if you still need it, because you end up nickel and diming yourself to death. Like, it's not like $5,000 or $10,000. It's like $500 here, $50 there, $30 there. And these are monthly, and they add up and they add up and they add up. And they're so small, it's like you will have to spend 2 or 3 hours on the phone maybe, or via email back and forth, whatever, to get a $30 a month line you don't need canceled. And a lot of people, I think, are probably like, oh, it's not worth it. It's not worth my time. But, and you can't delegate this kind of work if your name is on the contract or the position that you represent is on the contract.
Mm.
So you have to do it. So yeah. Like, someone in charge has to do it. I think that it's a really, really good idea. And this could be anything. I mean, you just need to know, like, what are you maintaining that's old? Everything that you have that's consuming electricity and that has to be maintained that may not be used anymore. Virtual servers are another one, like little virtual machines that are running.
Yeah.
Yep. People set these little servers up and they use them, and then the service gets replaced by like a cloud service and they never shut them down. So it's time for you to get a new like server to handle your virtual machines. and you talk to somebody like Dell, and Dell's like, oh, how many virtual machines are you running? You're like, oh, we're running 15. Yep. No, you have 15 virtual servers installed. You're only using 5, 6, 7. You can cut your infrastructure cost on that renewal. But if you go one for one and just say, oh, we're using 15, we need to replace 15, now you are in a completely different price category in terms of what you're buying. So instead of spending like $8,000 or $10,000, you're at like $15,000 or $20,000 because you think you need to replace these things. So it's just important to go through and like refresh. I was working with someone who was a graphic designer, and they had 3 screens on their desktop and, you know, just connected together, which graphic designers often have like 3 screens.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you like using 3 screens? And they were like, actually, I inherited these screens. I only want 2. And I just kept the third one is hooked up, but I just don't need it. The person before me needed it. Now, that's not a waste, but that screen probably could have been repurposed, you know, before. But this new employee came in and they just inherited. So it's this whole concept of just inheriting the job, inheriting the resources. And it's just, I think it's good to do these like little audits. They don't hurt anything. You're just asking questions and just kind of getting to the bottom of, you know, why do you have this and where did it come from?
That's good advice. That's really good advice. You know, I know it's just kind of a natural order of things. Like when I first started at my school, we had a copper lines for our internet coming in. Mm-hmm. A telecommunication company was laying fiber in the area, and they're like, hey, we can offer you 10 times the speed for probably less than what you're paying. And it was probably about 55% less per month of what we were paying for our copper line. Mm-hmm. And again, this is just something that just kind of came up. This isn't something I really had to do any real research on or anything, but yeah, new technology will save you money and a lot of times. That's good. That's nice. I like it.
So, all right, there it is.
Nice. Nice.
Exciting stories, people.
Very exciting stories.
What are these phone numbers for? Who's ever called this number?
I didn't even think about an elevator having a phone, but I guess it does in case it breaks down and they need to call for help.
Yeah. You know,
there it is. I never even suspected, but okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Oh, man. All right. Okay, Tony. Very rarely do I get on IT Babble and I tell teachers and schools to skip a particular product or service. But I'm about to do that tonight. I'm about to do it tonight. In November, I attended a conference. It's called the HECC Conference in Indianapolis. And usually at this conference, they give everybody some bit of technology. Like one year it was Spheros, another year was a VR headset. So in this year was a Chatterbox kit. And I gotta differentiate. There are 2 Chatterbox websites out there. There's chatterbox.io, which is to help people learn a second language or third language. And it's geared for business and enterprise. In the corporate world, this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about hellochatterbox.com, which is it's a kit. You construct a cardboard container and you put a Raspberry Pi in it with a button and you connect a speaker to it, and then you can create your own smart speaker. And it uses an open source standard called Mycroft. I guess based off of the Sherlock Holmes brother. And you're going to see this thing at a lot of conferences. If you go to conferences, you're probably going to run into a Chatterbox. Don't get it. If you're given one, that's something different.
Whoa, it's pretty expensive.
It is. Looking at it. Yeah. How expensive, Tony, since you've got it up there?
Okay. So, you got to tell me if I'm reading the pricing right. So it says Classroom Chatterbox Smart Speaker Kit Basic curriculum, lifetime device updates, says $139 per chatterbox.
That's right. And that does not include a Raspberry Pi, which you need to run. Now, you can have the 3B or the 4. And Raspberry Pis are pretty inexpensive, but for $139, all you're getting is cardboard.
Look like the Buddha box from South Park. Am I just seeing that everywhere in my mind? I just feel like these people want the Buddha box from South Park, where you just wear the box on your head to see your phone.
It looks like that. It does look like that. It does. It does. But it's a little speaker inside with a.
Did you touch one?
I did. I have. Yeah. So, myself, a teacher, and two of my colleagues went to this conference. So each of us got a chatterbox. So the teacher came. Now, because of supply chains, they didn't have the Raspberry Pi included. We had to wait for that to come later on. So totally fine. It's COVID, whatever. So they came right before winter break. So after winter break, we were busy just getting back up. And then we're like, the teacher's like, hey, I'm going to put this together and try it out. I'm like, sweet, that's awesome. Let us know. And she comes back and she goes, am I an idiot? I cannot get this cardboard thing together. It just kind of falls apart. And she had a piece. Now, the cardboard is like really firm cardboard. It's not like an Amazon box.
You have to fold it?
You have to fold it, but it's like perforated, right? Where to fold it? And there are three parts. There's this, if you're looking at a picture of it, there is... You've got like the smiley face with the button. That's one part. Then there's a bottom part which holds the Raspberry Pi. And then there is something to hold. Then there's a third piece of cardboard that holds the speaker in place. And so I like the idea. It comes like flat packed and you have to construct it and put the Raspberry Pi in there. And, you know, I kind of like it. You're building something. I get that. I think it's good. That's a good idea. But the problem is, like, I was constructing it, and it's IKEA-style instructions. So there are no words. It's just pictures and arrows, which is fine. It's pretty simple to put together. But at one point, I actually folded something the wrong way, and I had to fold it back. And when I folded it back, it just the perforation was so deep or whatever, it just fell off in my hand. And I had to tape it to the chatterbox. It was fine. It worked out okay. But... for one person, it took me 20 minutes to construct it. But it was kind of like the thing that holds the speaker doesn't hold it very well. So the speaker is quite loose.
It just seems like if you had the Raspberry Pi, you could build this with some like speakers that you take out of something that's not working anymore.
Yeah. And
cardboard.
Yeah.
That you can find anywhere.
And with a Raspberry Pi, you don't even really need a speaker. So, I mean, you can use an aux because it has an aux out on the Raspberry Pi. So you could plug it into anything and it'd be the speaker.
You could just buy a Chromebook and keep the box and just run it in the box and be like, hey, here's my smart speaker. It's a Chromebook in the box that it came in.
All right. Yep. Yeah, you could totally do that too. There's all sorts of ways you could achieve this. But putting it together wasn't bad, whatever. Had some hiccups, but it worked out okay. And then I turn it on and it's like, you have to go to this website to activate it. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And on the website, it's like, tell us, you know, the, Wi-Fi name and the password. I'm like, okay. So I type that in. So I plugged it in, I turned it on. You have to put in an SD card, so it has its own kind of operating system, I guess. So it boots up into the chatterbox thing. From turning it on to being able to do anything took, get this, Tony, 25 minutes.
Whoa.
25 minutes to, one, connect it to our Wi-Fi, two, run an update, because it just had an update, a software update. And then three... actually, you have to hit the top button and you have to tell Chatterbox, give me a personal code. And it gives you, I think, a 5 or 6 character code that you have to type into your web browser to connect it so you can get to the interface to actually code and actually actually get this thing working. So 20 minutes to put it together, 25 minutes just to give it the Wi-Fi, run the update, and get the code. Those three things took 25 minutes. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that with a class of 20 kids? And even if you're paired up, can you? No. So it's just. And then I was like, okay. So it came up. I got it connected, and all. I think we've put together three of them, and all three of them have had the exact same. Like it's been the exact same process. It's taken just as long. And then when we get it there, then you can. It's like a scratch kind of programming. Like it's drag and drop with blocks. So
okay.
You can have one and you can say listen for, and you can type in, you can say listen for IT Babble, and then it can say whatever you program it to say. And then it has, what do they call them? Not add-ons. Oh, I can't think of it, but.
Extensions,
yes. Thank you. Where it can be like, it can tell you the weather. It can pull like various information.
Widgets.
Like widgets. Is that what it says on there? Widgets?
Is it on your screen? Do you see like the weather on your screen? Is that how it goes?
No.
Is it like a little box that shows something?
No, it'll tell you. Like the chatterbox will speak the weather for you.
I don't know then. I don't know if it's audio, if it's a widget. That's a good question.
I don't know. But anyway, so
like a plug-in of some kind.
Yeah. So okay. Just to get it to say, so if I hit the button and chatterbox makes a noise, so it lets me know that it's listening. I then can say, hello world, for example, and then Chatterbox will process what I said. It will parse it out. And then if it heard me correctly, then it'll say whatever I want. That takes 20 seconds from the time I say hello world to its response, 20 seconds. And then if I wanted to do the weather, it's like, what's the weather? I can hit the button and it'll beep and I'll say, you know, what's the weather in Indianapolis? It takes 80 seconds, Tony, for it to respond. 80 seconds. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when you got a classroom full of kids, 80 seconds is of dead time. It's an eternity where kids are just waiting around. Oh,
you know, it does sound like a long time, Patrick.
It's way too long. It's way too long. Oh, it was just, it's so long. And then some of the coding things, like it'll like play, you know, you can like play a sound. It's got a bunch of preloaded MP3s and WAV files. You like play the sound. Well, most of the time it doesn't play a sound. Why? I don't know. It just doesn't play the sound. I got it to play a sound one time out of probably about 20 or 30 times testing with various different programs, one time. And for $139, this is not worth it at all. At all. It's just not. It is not worth it. I can't. Maybe if you got like a group of enthusiasts, it's an after school club or an after school activity or something, and you got like maybe 6 to 8 kids and you want to expose them to a whole bunch of different things. Maybe.
Right. Maybe the chatterbox is just like part of a bunch of other stuff you have in the room. And, you know, people can play around with it.
Yeah. But should schools buy this in mass? No.
It can be taken apart easily and put back together.
No. And so at the conference, the CEO, Kevin Elgin, he was there. And he had a bunch of different workshops. And I think I attended two of them. And a question came up is why cardboard? Why cardboard? Why not like maybe 3D printed plastic or something? And his mind is that the cardboard, it's easy to disassemble, so you can flatten it back out and it'll be a whole new experience for the next kid. The problem I have with the cardboard is that I think it will eventually break apart.
I think you can maybe use it once or twice.
Yeah.
It's not really designed to be reused. It gets weak.
Yeah, exactly. At the perforations, at the joints, it's going to get weak. It's going to break apart. Now, if you leave it, if you assemble it once and leave it there, the cardboard is really durable. I think it would stay in it for a very long time, keep its shape, and protect the Raspberry Pi, the speaker, and the button, and the microphone. But yeah, I just, this thing is at such a at this price point, this thing is it's I don't know it's poorly priced, it's poorly executed, and a teacher's in a classroom time is worth too much to recommend this. This thing is not I think it's a good idea, but it's just not been executed very well, and schools should take a pass. That's just my thought on it. I think I'm gonna make a video with the Chatterbox and just kind of put it out there and let people see it and work on it. See me working on it and what it and how it responds and how long it takes and that kind of thing. So, but
yeah, it's probably a good idea just so you know, just substantiate it. But I mean, it seems like the kit should be like you can make a speaker or maybe there's a camera in it. You can do motion activated stuff. Mm-hmm. It seems like it should be a kit that works with like multiple types of sensors. That would make a lot more sense.
That would be. I also saw at this same conference, I saw this this kit for a micro car, and it's just you have a breadboard, you have a micro. Oh my gosh, what is that thing from Microsoft bought them? I think it's a micro bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Micro bit, and they're like, this doesn't look like a car. It's just everything is like the only thing that we purchased off the shelf were 3D. We purchased the wheels because it's got wheels. We purchased some of the sensors. But the body of the car is 3D printed. We're using inexpensive materials off the shelf. Like you can buy one of these and then go and find and source all the materials yourself and buy ones yourself. And they have, and this, because it's a micro bit, it can plug into a whole mess of sensors on a breadboard. Can plug into it so it can talk with the micro bit, so you can actually put a sensor on there to determine speed or direction. You can have LED lights, and you can program LED lights when, like, it turns right. Maybe you do this for the light. And there is just a lot more possibilities with that type of kit than there are with the Chatterbox.
And you also, a good use of cardboard, by the way. I encourage schools not to throw out good quality cardboard. If it's good quality, it's not dirty, it's not covered in tape, stack that stuff up and then have the kids use some software like Lucidchart, or if you want, you can do SketchUp if you get the educational version or use the web version. Have them make something. Like Lucidchart isn't 3D, so you can make a floor plan or something flat in 2D, and then have them use the cardboard and some cutting tools that are age appropriate, with some gloves and goggles always, but have them use the cardboard to build from the 2D design the object. Mm-hmm. Like have them work with their hands and assemble something three-dimensional that comes from a two-dimensional plan. That is a good skill. And if you look at the MIT Fab Lab program and the Fab Teen program that they've been running for years, folding and working with three-dimensional objects with your hands is like the first thing that you learn to do. And so there's a lot of good uses for cardboard and assembly. So imagine, Patrick, if you built a little house, and then the teacher's like, okay, what do you want to put in your house? And some kid's like, I want to play music in my house. Great. How do we do that? Well, we're going to need a speaker. So you put a speaker in the house.
Yep.
We're going to need to, how do you want to play the music? Well, I don't know. So you go through all that and like, well, what about an MP3 player? So now you have the Raspberry Pi. You hook the Raspberry Pi up. So now the kids have built like a little house. I know the house is small, but it has a speaker in it. It has a Raspberry Pi maybe on the outside. So now they've made like a little miniature smart home for the cost of garbage and a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of throwing that out. Like you can do a lot with all these materials. I think telling people exactly what to make with the materials kind of takes away part of the goal.
Yeah. And I mean, you, yeah, yeah, I agree there, because you get this kit, and I mean, if you get it with the Raspberry Pi, it's $179, because it comes with a Raspberry Pi 4. So it's $40. But if you just get to $139, it's all you have in there is cardboard, a speaker, which is, I mean, we're not talking a clip speaker here. You know, we're talking, you know, something really inexpensive that you can get from Tiger Direct or Newegg, a microphone that plugs into the Raspberry Pi, the speaker that plugs into the Raspberry Pi, and there's a light, which you can't see. You can't, the light is for the button at the top, but you can't see it because the plastic on the button is too thick, and the light's not bright enough. So you have to turn off the lights in the room. It has to be like really dark for you to even see the light. I like the idea of it, but I like a lot of the ideas of the Chatterbox. It's just not executed well. And I know that Kevin Elgin, the CEO, he's working on this. He's very passionate about it. He's working on this all the time. The Chatterbox that we got at the HECC conference was version 2. The first one had feet on it, which makes it look very cute, but Kevin said, like, when you hit the button, it would just tip over. So
it had huge feet.
It didn't have huge feet.
Feet would have to be, I'm just doing this in my head, but probably 1.5 times the width of the box.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Clown shoes. Need clown shoes.
Clown shoes. But anyway, so I like the idea here of the Chatterbox. It's just not executed well. And at that price point, it's not something that I think schools should investigate or try out on their own. I think it's something that they should just wait and see what else is out there on the market, because there's a lot of other things. But if you go to conferences, technology conferences in particular, you're going to see the Chatterbox probably. It's going to be all over ISTE. It was all over HECC. If you just don't take our advice and you still want to get one, just get one. Try it out for yourself. Make the decision. Don't buy a classroom set. Don't do that.
That's a good idea. Like, get a, you know, start with one. Get a sample.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you go to conferences, will you also see a certain laptop, Patrick, that Microsoft is offering?
You bet you will. I'm sure of it.
I was going to order a sample in February. I still haven't ordered it.
I cannot wait. I know it sounds like I'm pooping all over this thing, but the Surface Laptop SE, I am really liking this thing, because I'm all about, at that price point, it's $250. It's a great price point for schools. I like the, right now, Chromebook is, the Chromebooks are eating everybody's lunch.
Oh, you know what happened to me though this week? I have some Chromebooks that we don't have a management license for. Not very many, but I have some. And once we switched over to GoGuardian, we were just like, we don't need a license for anything. But that was a mistake, because now you cannot run NWEA maps on the Chromebook unless you do it in kiosk mode, and you can't use kiosk mode without a license.
That's right.
So before, in my own defense, you could run it in non-kiosk mode.
Yeah, you could just go to like a website, like a test browser website.
They will not let you do it. If you try to do it now, it says your browser's out of date. And I looked it up. So we now have to buy 75 licenses for these Chromebooks.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so that annoyed me, because the Chromebooks weren't that cheap.
Oh,
so like once we add the license fee in, the one-time license fee, but once we add it in, the Chromebooks are close to $250.
Yeah, it could be
maybe a little more. Actually,
yeah, maybe closer to $300. I'm excited about the Surface Laptop SE. Microsoft unveiled about an 8-minute video where they completely disassemble, showing how repairable it is. And the internet was like, most of the internet was like, yay, great job, fantastic. Now, but you and I, Tony, we can buy the Surface Laptop SE because we work at a school, but Joe Blow on the street can't buy a Surface Laptop SE. They can't. They can't. You have it's only for schools right now. And I love that it's repairable, but I got some serious questions. So they take off the top screen, but they don't take the screen out of the lid. So does that mean if the screen breaks, like on every Chromebook we've ever had, you can replace just the digitizer, the screen. You don't have to replace the lid, and that is a significant cost savings because the lid comes with a microphone, comes with a camera, it comes with the Wi-Fi antenna, the coaxial Wi-Fi antenna. So there's a lot of technology that's just in the lid. And if you can just buy the screen, that'll probably be $50. But if you buy the whole lid, you're probably looking at more than $100. And
wait, so are you saying that if you have to replace the lid, you basically need to buy a new laptop?
I think you can do one repair on a Surface Laptop SE before you have to buy a new laptop. So a few years ago, Apple made a big deal. They had this repair program and everything, and they're like, "Yeah, we're going to be much more repairable, and we're going to offer more OEM components to our repair people and all this other stuff." But the thing is, they did this. They pulled this one. This was a cheap little trick. You couldn't buy a screen for like a MacBook Air. You had to buy the whole lid. And so it went from $75 all the way up to like $175. And people were like, "I just want the screen. I don't want to have to buy the whole lid." But no, that's just it, you know, I'm just worried that Microsoft is going to make it appear repairable, but it's not going to be very cost effective to repair. And so a lot of schools are going to maybe repair it once, maybe twice, and then just buy a new device.
Do we know if they're going to have like an accidental damage program so you basically can get like one or two free repairs?
I don't know. That would be great. That would be great.
Because that would really kind of change it, right?
I think so, yeah, for
if
sure.
If it's like, look, you get one repair, no questions asked. If that now, because Dell has that, right? So if you buy Dell computers that your kids are going to use, Chromebooks or Windows, you can get a warranty option that is will repair any damage once. Now they say it's like a 3-year, but I think it's they're pretty good at tracking. I think you get a limited number of accidental repairs, and that means anything: dropping it, spilling water on it, whatever.
That's great.
And it's something that we recommend to parents. We don't require them to add it, but I do think it's quite useful, especially for younger kids, to have that option.
Yeah, I don't think there's been any news about that. Another thing there's been no news about is like where can you get these parts? Do you have to go through Microsoft? See, one thing that's great about Chromebooks, if you wanted to, let's say you call up Dell and you're like, "We need a battery,"
right?
And they're like, "Gosh, they're on back order." You can go to many different vendors and get that battery. You don't have to get it through Dell. I think with Microsoft, though, with the Surface Laptop SE, you're going to have to get it. Yeah. Yeah. Because there are companies out there that buy old Chromebooks, and what do? They strip them down for parts. They'll be like, "Wow, this keyboard works fine. Let's take it down. Let's take it off. You know, package it up. Get it ready to ship out. Somebody could buy that thing." So I just don't know about Microsoft and their cost of their parts, because Microsoft tends to be expensive when you look at their Surface lineup. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I'm optimistic, but I also know that as I put in the article, that companies like money. Companies like to make money.
Yeah.
So,
well, I still plan on ordering one to test it out.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. I'm really kind of excited. There's no Microsoft store on there.
Go Guardian said that I want to see if it runs on it. Go Guardian said that they support Windows.
Yeah, I guess, because it is an Edge browser, and you can only put you can't put another browser on there. You can't download Chrome or Firefox or anything. You could only keep the Edge and use the Edge browser, and it's Chromium, so I don't see why It should work.
So, and if GoGuardian, their sales rep said, yeah, you know, we're fully supporting like Windows 10 laptops. I'm like, okay. So that's why I was like, we can keep our monitoring in place and give students like maybe another option.
Yeah. And what's great about this is that it comes with full on Office, not the web version. It's like Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint. The full desktop versions are installed on the computer, which is way more powerful than their online ones. And of course, you get OneDrive built into there too, so you can save all that stuff in OneDrive as well. I don't know. There's a lot of things to like about this device, and so I'm hoping that schools can get parts in a timely manner and repair this stuff themselves. So. At a reasonable price. But we'll see. Time will tell, and I cannot wait for you to get your hands on it. So, all right, Tony. I have no idea what this topic is.
Oh yeah, my last topic. What's a freaking BI? Have you seen in like your Office 365 or an Office 365 Microsoft Power BI?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Okay. So BI stands for Business Intelligence.
There
are a variety of business intelligence tools, but they are increasingly becoming popular in the educational market. So you could say that a spreadsheet is a business intelligence tool. Any kind of dashboard system, business intelligence. Google Data Studio, business intelligence.
Yeah.
So Tableau? That's very popular. Tableau is a very popular business intelligence tool. A lot of schools use it. So I just want to talk about it a little bit and kind of explain it because I had someone call me and they're like, man, am I crazy? Like, they're using Canvas, the learning management system, which I like. Like, we're using Canvas and they're supposed to have like analytics and all this other stuff. So I looked over what Canvas was saying, and what Canvas was basically stating was that they have some tools in their dashboard, but they have switched to a model. And here's the important point, because this is, in a lot of ways, this is kind of how like PowerSchool work and some other companies. They've switched to a model where they're putting a lot of their development in their API, their application program interface, so that you can use business intelligence tools to model and work with your data. So instead of them making dashboards for you, they are making it possible for you to make your own dashboards, which is often really, really hard to do.
It's certainly not easy.
Yeah. And when you look at the language, when you're buying these products, you're looking at the language, you're like, oh, they have so much data. Like, they have data, they have all these analytics, they have them, so part one of this is, when you're looking at a system and you want to be data driven, like you're like, hey, we want dashboards, we want this, we want that. If they're like, oh yeah, we have data, we have analytics, you need to ask the company if they're providing the analytics engine and the dashboards, or if they're just providing the data stream. A lot of them may just be providing the data stream. Now, they may have some dashboards, but the dashboards are limited. Do you see what I mean? They're spending all their time just making it possible for you to use the data instead of building stuff. Now, there's a good argument for that. And that argument is that customers are so varied that they really don't know what to build. They start building stuff and it only really helps. It connects with like 10, 20% of their customers. And then when they want to charge people to build stuff, it's too expensive because they don't have a dedicated team that's just building out little analytical widgets for people. And a lot of these widgets, they're not for financial analysis or anything. So they don't have the kind of like return on investment that you would need to pay a developer at Canvas or at PowerSchool to make it for you. So anyway, in this particular case, I was experimenting with the Canvas data. So I don't have Canvas at my job, so I contacted someone, and I'm like, hey, someone asked me about this. Could I work with you and work with your Canvas data to see what business intelligence tools, you know, work with it? And through this process, and I tested a bunch because I wanted to see what the options were. And not all these tools are free. Some of them are quite expensive. I really like Amazon QuickSight. It's fine to do like an analysis a couple times a year, but like any AWS thing, it can add up. These tools, these new ones, they can read lots of data. Like, I don't want to throw out any numbers, but they exceed spreadsheets by factors of 10. Like, it's crazy how much data they can read. Mm-hmm. And they read this data in to these engines like Microsoft Power BI, and then you can structure the data so you can see it side by side. You can see it in all these different ways. And I know that sounds very abstract, but just imagine like Excel, like you're making a chart in Excel, but imagine having like 10 sheets at the bottom of your workbook in Excel, and you just being able to start saying, okay, from this sheet, I want to combine the data. I want to view the data from like sheets 5, 7, and 8 here. And I only want to see like the first three rows of each. And I want you to take an average of all those numbers. And I want you to tell me like what columns can't relate to each other. Meaning these columns don't work because they're numbers, and these columns don't work because they're text, and we need numbers and not text. Like, these engines do a lot of really, really cool stuff. But they're quite in depth and hard to use. So I got some of them to work, and a lot of them work with these systems called connectors. So a lot of companies actually just build a connector, and all it does is it'll say, hey, what's your school management system? And you're like, oh, it's PowerSchool. And you put that in, and it asks you some questions to authenticate. And then it's like, where would you like to send your data? And you're like, oh, I want to send it to Google Data Studio. So you put in more information, and then these connectors actually push the data, pull the data from PowerSchool and push it to Google for you. So I was messing around with a lot of different ones. Still though, Patrick, super complicated, right?
Yeah.
Super complicated.
Yep. Yep.
All right. So then I'm just going to wrap this up kind of quickly. So then I started thinking, there has to be an easier way to do this. So I realized, especially in the education world, where the data people need isn't financial, that's important. It's not normal private information. We're not talking about credit card numbers. We're not talking about deep numbers for like investment or anything like that. People have written a lot of scripts that work in Google Sheets, and you can get a hold of some of these scripts and implement them, and it lets you like pull your data from Canvas into Google Sheets, and then you can either look at it using Google Sheets if that's where you want to stop. Or you can then connect Google Sheets to like Google Data Studio, Power BI, and all these other systems. And so that's kind of where I left it. But I was really shocked when I was going in these forums, these Canvas forums, and all these people had the same question. I want to look at my data inside of my database. And the answer was, oh, you can access your data and look at it however you want.
Wow.
And I'm like, I can access the engine of my car, and I can take it apart any way that I want. And so if anyone out there actually is using Canvas and you'd like to know how to grab and visualize your data in Google Sheets, reach out to me at you can email me at info@tonydeprato.com, and I will talk to you about like what steps you can take to do that. It's actually surprisingly simple once you kind of get a hold of the concept. But I think these tools are going to start to be popping up everywhere. I talked to another person who uses Canvas, and guess what they did, Patrick?
But
they contracted Salesforce, and Salesforce used the Canvas API, and Salesforce built them a business intelligence dashboard system.
Yep. Yep.
And I think I'm starting to see, again, more and more of this, and I'm seeing less development inside of the package and more development of the data stream, and then putting the onus on the customer to actually build the dashboards.
Interesting. So I, at this conference that I went to in November, one of the workshops I went to was a guy who did just this, and he was talking about Google Data Studio. And he goes, my job, my profession is to go into school at a school district, is to go into a school district and set up these dashboards based on their, that's his job. That's what his company does. And he goes, I'm not here to sell my company. I'm here just to tell you of what you can do with data. And he, like you said, Tony, it's not easy. He emphasized that. He goes, it's really, really hard because you have a lot of data and you can organize it in so many different ways and display it in so many different ways. And that, he goes, that's where you need, what do you want it to look like? What data do you want to show? And then you have to kind of, because the systems are so powerful. He goes, even Google Data Studio, when he mentioned Microsoft and he mentioned Tableau, and I don't think he mentioned QuickSight, but he's like, though those things are on a, they're so powerful that just learning them takes quite a bit of time, and it's a rabbit hole. Like, you have all this data, and you can display everything and anything.
Yeah.
He goes, so you really have to be very kind of prudent about what you want. Just kind of have, get a laser-like focus of what you want, and just stay there. You know, don't say, oh, well, I can show this data too or that data too. He goes, just start small, and then as you get comfortable and know how to manipulate, not manipulate the program, use the program, and then with the data. But yeah, it this is, I think, especially big districts, I think this is something that they are, this is something they're hiring people for, even if that means outsourcing it.
It's going to be like, let's say that you're planning to employ any person in your, on your tech team or something like that. And before, you were always using the dashboards and stuff that were built in to your SIS or LMS. I just feel like there's a possibility that we're starting to see a change in how the industry works. And that change is going to be the company is putting more and more development and effort on the different types of data you can access, because you can read and write. Like, they, you can do both.
Yep.
And then it's going to be on the school to figure out how to access and use the data. So it would be good, if you know that now, it would be good to start asking yourself, you know, who do we have who might be interested in doing this work, or maybe starting to get training? Like, Google Data Studio looks like it's just some kind of free product sitting there in your tenant, but it's not. Like, it is a, it's a, it, it's a high-end application that requires training and practice.
Yeah, yeah. And as powerful as Google Data Studio is, the guy in this workshop, he goes, this is where you should start out. He goes, of all of these other tools, this is probably not the easiest one, but it's the most limited. And so it kind of constrains you from, and so it's, you know, like editing an image in Canva as opposed to editing it in Photoshop. You know, it's a lot more straightforward. And even then, like, we played with it for a little bit. Even then, it's like, oh my gosh, you have to have, like, your data has to be formatted. Like, you were talking about, like, oh, I've got words here and I've got text here, so I can't just say, look at the whole spreadsheet. I need to look at these columns within this spreadsheet. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think initially getting started, like, using, if you can pull your data, so let's just forget products. If you can pull your data into a spreadsheet, that is the best place to start, because then you can look at it and you can start kind of messing around with it. And lots of people can use spreadsheets. And if you can understand it in the spreadsheet and you can get an idea of what you want to do from the spreadsheet, then when you engage one of these business intelligence tools, you're going to be a lot more efficient.
Yep. Yes. And whether your school knows it or not, this data can be super helpful. Super helpful.
Yeah. So just a quick update. I do have Windows 10 installed on the SD card.
Whoa, yes. Congratulations.
It is running through the Oracle virtual machine virtual box system. And it is running. I don't know how stable it is. I'm getting a little bit of a spinning ball here.
Oh.
But, yeah, I gave it 3.5-ish gigs of RAM, so we'll see.
All right.
If that's, we'll see if that's enough. It's probably like a horrible, don't do this. Yeah, and I have enough space on my hard drive to run it normally. I just wanted to do this. There's no logic here. I just wanted to try it. So don't do this.
All right. Okay. Well, anyway, for everybody, that was a great. That's a great way to end the show right there with a success
just
of sorts.
Wasting your time on technology. That's what I do a lot, and I'm just like, what am I doing with my life? And this is what I. It's what I'm doing right now. Sunday night, I'm trying to run Windows 10 on an SD card.
It's fun. It's fun.
Patrick.
Yeah.
Before we hang up, I have to read this. Google. Okay, on Google. Here, I'm going to type it right now. Windows 10 on SD card. I'm going to read you what it says.
Okay, all right. Let's hear it.
Can you run Windows on an SD card? Windows 10 cannot be installed or run from an SD card. That's official for Microsoft. Can't do it. Answers.microsoft.com. You can't do it, and I'm doing it.
Well done.
So there you go, Microsoft. There you go.
Oh, Bill Gates. I know he's not on the board or anything, but I'm sure he's like, no.
It would be funny, like, if you run it on an SD card, actually, if you unlock features and then you realize that this is how Bill Gates runs Windows.
Oh, the truth is finally been unveiled.
What are all these bank accounts?
What are all these bank accounts? Is that the coronavirus vaccine? Yes, it is. The formula. I can make it at home with Crisco.
don't. Patrick,
yeah.
Someone's going to be like, IT Babble said we can make a vaccine with Crisco.
Don't make.
You can't. Although we could do a whole, we could do like part of an episode on the CRISPR guy. Maybe we should think about that. That's a technology topic.
That is a technology topic.
And the CRISPR dude is trying to make his own vaccine right now for COVID.
Oh, man.
With his own, with his own genetic code, he's trying to make his own custom vaccine. So,
oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Scary stuff out there. Yeah. Anyway, right. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next podcast next week. Keep on babbling out there, people.